Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, and welcome to It's Complicated, the podcast to help you untangle your relationship with your phone.
Well, we've all been pushed around.
I'm Tanya Gooden, and each week I'll be talking to my guests about how they manage the relationship with the tiny tyrant in their pocket. We'll be talking about how our phone habits affect our work, our lives, and our loves, and about what our relationship with our phone might just tell us about our relationship with ourselves.
Well, we've all been swept away.
If you want help and you want hope, you've come to the right place. This is It's Complicated.
Lost everything you tried to save, 'cause we've all been swept away, yeah.
This week, I'm delighted to have one of Britain's leading celebrity and portrait photographers with me, Dan Kennedy. Dan's work has appeared in all the world's top publications, including the Sunday Times magazine, Hollywood Reporter, Billboard, The Independent, The Observer, Q magazine, and many others, and on billboards from New York to Tokyo. His dazzling A-list clients include Angelina Jolie, Keira Knightley, Madonna, Dua Lipa, and David Beckham, as well as Superman, Henry Cavill, Doctor Who, Jodie Whittaker, and my personal favourite, the bodyguard, Richard Madden. Dan has just jetted back in from a shoot in Miami, so I'm really happy to be able to grab some of his time and talk to him today. So, Dan, thank you so much for coming to talk to me today. I've been really excited about talking to you. So we met at a festival last summer where we were both talking. And I remember being really struck by what you were talking about, because you were talking about your career as a photographer, but quite a lot of the talk was about your relationship with your phone and tech and how you've learned how to manage that in order to be as creative and productive as possible. So I was wondering if we could kick off by talking about that, how that's developed.
Yeah, I have. I have paid a bit of attention to my relationship with my phone and my tech. But yeah, I noticed that I was spending far too much time on my phone. And yeah, I just made a bit of a point of blocking my time off a bit better and making sure that I wasn't just sort of frittering it away.
And do you think that was affecting how you work? I mean, was it affecting your productivity? I mean, I guess if you're spending a lot of time on your phone, it was. But do you think when we spend too much time on our phone, it affects creativity as well? What's your experience?
I think it definitely does. You know, I've read all this stuff about attention residue, you know, where you're doing one task and then you move over to another. And actually some of your residue is left on task A when you're then on task B, you know, and flitting between tasks is not good. So I worked with a mentor about a year ago, which was really profound for my business and profound for my life, really, as well. At the ripe old age of 46, I think I was inadvertently seeking that out, and some of the things that we worked on were really profound. And the first and main one really was getting control of my time. I realized that I wasn't in any way in control of it. You know, I'm freelance, I work for myself. You know, I could be doing three celebrity shoots back to back on 3 days and then nothing for 5 days and then back on to another two shoots. So, you know, I'm very much in control of my time. And, you know, and I was at the stage where, you know, I was sort of standing looking out the window at the drizzle on a Tuesday morning at 11 o'clock thinking, what do I do? Should I do some accounts or no, let's do some new business. Let's hit the phones and hit that list of people we need to contact. Actually, no, no, screw all of that. I think actually I want to go and have a coffee with a friend, you know. So no one teaches you any of this as a as a creative, as a freelance. So one of the first and most important things that I did working with a mentor was put a plan into place. It might even sounds a bit funny saying that, working with a mentor to put that plan into place. But, you know, I didn't have any framework with which to kind of run my freelance life, even though I've got myself to, you know, what some might say a very successful level. There was still no framework. So the short answer to the question really is that I put a framework into place, and that framework involves me working in specific blocks of time when I'm not on a photo shoot. So all the rest of the stuff that you have to deal with as a creative, you know, I ended up organizing that, and my days now form very organized blocks.
So you carve out spaces for things like invoicing that you were talking about, or new business, or
absolutely, yeah,
planning.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was never that kid to put my CDs in rainbow order, CDs showing my age, but you know, I was sort of a bit two fingers to organization, but you know, kind of working with someone to address that has really changed everything. And my working weeks are totally transformed now. And so if I'm on a non-shoot day where I'm not photographing someone and I'm busy working on something else, you know, I have a very strict kind of morning routine. The first, you know, hour of my day is set in stone. It's kind of non-negotiable. And that's had a really profound effect on my working life and my creativity. And in fact, it's relevant to our chat today because these blocks must not be interrupted. One of the most powerful books that I read, which was suggested to me by the mentor, was called Deep Work by Cal Newport.
Oh, yeah.
And Cal Newport tells an amazing story about how he works in these concentrated blocks of time, not necessarily long blocks, but blocks of time where you really are uninterrupted. And so I try as often as possible to do that. And uninterrupted means having your phone on flight mode and not being interrupted. And then we're back to attention residue, and we're back to, oh, you know, hang on just one second, I've just got an email coming in, and oh God, did we not send that? Oh God, you know, and then you're out of your time block. That time block for me may have been a time block of creativity of 50 minutes. That's all I might have committed myself to. But during that 50 minutes, I need to get the creative ready for a shoot next week with, you know, Keira Knightley, you know, and I need to work out where I'm going to shoot, what I'm going to be doing on that shoot, you know, planning lots and lots of detail about that. And that really works for me if I'm then immersed in this block rather than being distracted, which otherwise I would have been, and we all would be, you know.
So Cal Newport very famously doesn't have a smartphone.
Oh, and I isn't, didn't know that.
Yeah, and isn't on social media. So,
amazing, I didn't know that either.
So you do both. You're on social media and you have a smartphone. So how does that morning routine work in relation to tech? I mean, do you have kind of rules about, I don't pick my phone up until a certain time, or I don't use it?
I do, and you know, when I put that into place, it was obviously novel to me, and it seemed quite novel. But now, of course, you know, you hear that a lot. It's mentioned by loads of people, you know, don't check your emails first thing in the morning, blah, blah, blah. But that is part of my routine. I wake up, I do 10-minute meditation, and then I have this kind of crazy weird breakfast smoothie that's got loads of energy in it, and then I plan my day, and I plan my day kind of in time blocks. And so at that point I then either do some exercise depending on what I'm doing, where I'm basing myself for the day, and then straight after that then on goes my tech. So at that point I turn on my emails and my phone goes on, you know, and
so
then
you're
the
up
starts.
For about an hour or 50
yeah,
minutes
for an hour, really,
that.
Something like that. Yeah, I've kind of honed it down. You know, sometimes I have to squeeze it. Maybe sometimes the meditation gets cut to 5 minutes, and the smoothie, as a lot of it's been prepped the night before, and then I'm gone. And other times, you know, I allow myself a bit longer. But I've actually found that, you know, I definitely am happier by doing that. So the kind of the proof is in the pudding for me. I think my quality of life is a lot better by doing those things, really, you know. And the tech is, you know, my relationship with the tech plays a part in that. On the flip side, you know, Instagram is, I have to say, is quite a large part of my working life now.
Yeah.
And it has to be. It doesn't have to be, but it is. It is. And,
as a photographer, I can see why it needs to be. Tell me about your relationship with social media and Instagram.
Instagram is the social media of choice for me. I do use Facebook as well. But Instagram, it kind of feels quite nice, really, for me. It kind of works. I post new work on there and I get inspiration from there. I use the tags on Instagram a lot, the save function to save images that I really like the look of. And I go back through those. I'm doing a shoot tomorrow, for example, and about an hour ago, I was just going through my saved Instagram tags looking for extra inspiration for my shoot tomorrow. So it's a valuable tool for me. And at the same time, I post some of my own work on there, you know, and I've been commissioned from people seeing that. You know, I did a personal project in Berlin where I went sort of a bit retro and did some portraits in black and white, and I posted those in the Sunday Times, saw them and commissioned me to do a portrait for them. So there's power in it. It's a tool, definitely, as well as it can be a big distraction.
So I want to talk a bit about your journey as a photographer, because I know you started in the darkroom, didn't you, of your local newspaper, and 20 years later you're a celebrity photographer. So how did that happen?
Yeah, I started photographing bands in my hometown of Norwich, sort of squeezing myself to the front of the stage and taking pictures, which was really challenging and very hard work, but I really enjoyed it, and that's how I kind of got the buzz, really, I suppose. And then, yeah, I had a job at the local newspaper, the Great Yarmouth Mercury, which was sort of man stubs toe on pavement, you know, go round, visit the man, visit the pavement. What, the pavement,
yeah,
and the man?
No, the paper.
The paper is still going. I don't know. I think so. Yeah, I guess so. Probably just, I should imagine. So I kind of cut my teeth there, and then I moved to Nottingham and I worked for a news agency in Nottingham where you can make your mistakes at local newspaper level, you know, it's sort of fire at the local hotel kind of thing. And, you know, you sort of forget to load film into your camera, showing my age now. you know, you never do that again once you've made that mistake. So then I worked for a news agency in the Midlands in Nottingham, and then came down to London and worked on Fleet Street. So I worked on The Times and The Sun when I first started. So I was just sort of a freelance, total freelancer.
And, gosh, that must have been quite different, The Times and The Sun.
Worlds apart, indeed, yeah. And actually, you know, I wasn't overly worried about working for The Sun. You know, I was much keener on working for The Times, really. But The Sun paid £50 a day more than The Times did. £50 a day, The Sun started offering me five shifts a week. The picture editor rung me and said, I don't want you working for The Times anymore. I want you working for me. So I ended up working solidly for The Sun for a couple of years. But actually, they were so fantastic and so well organised. The phone would ring at sort of 6:30 in the morning, and it would be like, you're going to a dorm raid in Essex, or it could be, you're going to the Maldives. And it was, I did a dorm raid in Essex
and
I
went to
the Maldives. And I ended up travelling the world doing shifts for The Sun. Did like British and American troops training in the Mojave Desert in California, and I did the first series of I'm a Celebrity in Australia. So
did
I
you?
Kind of got really, and I was like 26 or 27, you know, having this amazing time after just arriving kind of wet behind the ears, you know, from Nottingham in London, and then just being able to travel was fantastic, and work with some amazing journalists. The, you know, The Sun behind the scenes was incredibly well run and a very fair kind of place to work, you know. So that was great experience. I just sort of realised I didn't want to be fat and bald and 50 on my stepladders outside Downing Street, you know.
Did you do that? Were you one of those guys on the stepladder?
I did go to Downing Street a few times, yeah. Oh. I remember it just being bitterly cold. It was always cold and the light was really difficult to control. So occasionally, yeah, during the first few months, I would cover any kind of news story that would happen that they would put me on. So it was always a question of them calling me and assigning me jobs. You know, I was not going out just choosing something to photograph and then seeing if I could sell it. I was sort of already on order for the day, really.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that kind of that was great. And then yeah, I just made that decision. I didn't want to be doing that, really. So I kind of smarmed my way over into the world of studio photography. So yeah.
So in that whole kind of length of your career, the digital world happened, didn't it? Probably in the middle, or, you know, well, certainly smartphones for about the last 11 years only. So yeah. What differences has that made to you in terms of a photographer, in terms of the tech you use or the way you work or the way you get work? I mean, that must have been a bit of a revolution. You were talking about putting film in a camera, so that's one thing I know that's changed. But what else has changed?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I kind of cut my teeth on film in the local paper. So you were, you know, shooting five or six rolls of film a day and then processing it by hand and then making prints in the darkroom and then sending those prints off on a motorbike courier that would then get kind of, you know, scanned and reproduced for the paper. So it was kind of seems very basic stuff. And so when I made that move to from Nottingham to London, I invested in like the cutting edge digital cameras, which were hilarious. There was something like 3 megapixel, you know, you've got 10 times that
those,
in your phone now, you know. So and then the first few stages of digital were a bit ropey. The pictures were always very orange and a bit sort of had a milky kind of finish and needed a lot of work in Photoshop to make them look normal. And then, you know, we're at a stage now where the cameras have amazing ability and range to work in low light. And obviously smartphones, the cameras within smartphones have come on massively in that time as well.
So you're in the kind of celebrity and media world. Naming no names, have you noticed how habits have changed with people around phones in the time that you've been shooting celebrities? Do you sometimes find it difficult to wrench someone off their phone if you're actually photographing them?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, in the hair and makeup room, they're glued with their thumbs on the screen. Yeah, also often, depending on the level of the talent, you know, sometimes they're finishing a text or an email while on set and we're kind of just waiting around. And then, you know, even though they know we're waiting, they kind of finish doing what they're doing and then hand the phone to the assistant and say, oh, God, sorry, guys, were you waiting? You know, when they blatantly knew that we were. So, yeah, depending on who it is, if it's lower down the pecking order, we can be a bit more like, right, guys, are we... We're ready now, are we? You know, whereas you get a bit more A-list, you know, sometimes we maybe hold off a little bit. But yeah, I mean, and exactly, people saying to the agent, oh, can you just do a quick boomerang of me? You know, can you just, you know,
because they all have it on their Insta stories. This is me on my shoot, and there's constant, you know, filming of what's going on.
Totally. I mean, we have it written on the bottom of our call sheets now in red letters, you know, no social media, you know, because you're going to essentially break the exclusive, you know, if you're on a magazine shoot, you know, it's many a time, you know, some sort of careless PR person or someone will, you know, take a photograph of my screen. So I have every picture I take comes up on a really big screen so everyone can see what's happening, the talent and the PRs, the management and everything.
And they can be tempted to take a picture of that.
They're constantly taking pictures of that. And so sometimes the talent do it and post that. Sometimes the PRs do it, you know, sometimes the assistants will do it, you know. So obviously that's bad news if it's a potential cover picture. So yeah, the power of everyone having a phone and within one hit of a button, you know, you can just publish something that then makes it non-exclusive, you know?
So have you had that happen?
I haven't actually had like a cover shoot ruined by it, but I've been a part of very stern email trails that say, hey, listen, you know, we're just about saved it this time because what you photographed wasn't actually, you know, on the cover, or it was, you know, it was a test frame and we can get away with doing a careful edit on the shoot, but please do not do this. So yeah, it's the power of that, and the whole point about once you've pushed the button, once it's gone and can never be brought back. So yeah, it's a really big thing. Also, what happens is we see some people, part of our crew, will take a picture of the big screen and then they'll filter it themselves, so changing my perception of the creative. You know, maybe I've made it black and white, maybe I've increased the contrast loads, maybe I've put kind of an amazing blue wash all over it or something,
and they
put an Instagram filter over the top and then post that, so which kind of is sort of undoing a bit of the good work we're trying to instill. So that's another thing that we never used to have to worry about before camera phones were up to that level. So yeah.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
I wanted to ask you a bit about the speed of turnaround, because you did mention to me earlier about having kind of adrenal burnout or, you know, health issues a year ago or a couple of years ago. And I wondered if any of that was down to just the kind of the speed that we have to work at nowadays. You know, in your industry particularly, you used to work in a dark room. You used to have time to develop, you know, even if you were commissioned, presumably by the Sun or the Times, you know, your picture editor didn't see your work for a while. Now, is there a massive kind of pressure to turn things around really quickly?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think especially with social media, you know, people are expecting things, you know, 5 minutes ago. So yeah, definitely not in everything we do. I work for a lot of monthly magazines and Sunday supplement magazines. So there's a lot more of a lead time on that. And also our processes that we do the shoot and then we do an edit and then the edit goes to the retouchers and the retouchers do some final work to the images, they come back for approval, and then they get published. So I guess, you know, if I was still working in the world of newspapers, it would be super quick, you know, but I'm not in that world so much now. So I have a little bit more breathing space. But yeah, I was on a job in Paris recently where the turnaround was really quick, you know, super quick. We're kind of, you know, sending pictures, you know, within 10 minutes of shooting them. So yeah, you're really under pressure then to kind of to deliver. But luckily with most of the clients I have now, there's some lead time built in. We always check that before, you know, how quickly the turnaround is going to be. So, yeah.
So in terms of your own phone habits, you've talked a bit about your healthy habits in the morning. What other kind of boundaries do you have or have you set in place that have made you think healthier or more productive?
Well, I'm trying desperately to do no phones in the bedroom, which is
yes.
which is going pretty well, actually. Occasionally, somehow, it seems to whittle its way back in and I can't really explain why.
So do you put it out at a certain time or never take it in there? What's the rule?
It's well, in the evening, really. So it's in the evening. Then I've just made a point of it being, it's always charged overnight. I always make sure it's charged in the spare room, basically.
Yeah.
So I make sure I do that. But I do feel it's a battle, a constant battle with my, you know, with myself. I find myself inanely checking the same things. You know, I flit from Instagram and then sometimes I just check Facebook and then I find myself checking Sky News. I don't care what's on Sky News. And then, oh, maybe an email's come in and suddenly, you're sort of in this trance almost. And then I find myself in it. You know, it might have only been 5 minutes, but then I'm like, pull yourself together, what are you doing? You know, and then I put the phone down and go back to what I'm doing. So whilst I'm good on the time blocks that we've talked about, you know, sometimes by the afternoon or if I'm traveling or, you know, then I can find myself in that loop that we just spoke about and it's hard to get out. I tried something called Freedom, which is an app which is meant to block you from reaching certain
But you can
sites.
Override that, I think, can't you?
I think it's either shut down or doesn't work anymore. Yeah. So it's not doesn't seem to be a robust solution that I've found.
No, I think it's down to our self-control, isn't it? And that's what's so hard.
And that's the problem, isn't it? Yeah. Because I think when you know, I've got this horrendous timer on my computer screen in the office, which is how many days, hours, minutes there are potentially left in my life, which is quite a horrendous thing to
have.
I don't know why.
I don't
know who put it on there
or
why.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's probably generally really bad. But the fact that, you know, we do have a finite amount of time on this planet, and with our to-do lists, I don't know about yours, but mine is perpetually overflowing permanently.
Never gets to the end of
it. You never get to the end of it. So what, you know, why am I in this loop of Sky News? I even check Twitter sometimes. I'm not active on Twitter in any way. It's not part of my business, you know. I just stick it on the list of thumb scroll things that I go through, you know. So it's bad, you know, it's bad. I need to some Tanya Gooden help to kind of get myself back up to speed here. One pathetic excuse is that Facebook is now more like a duckling riding on an Alsatian, you know, rather than something actually of value. So I definitely spend much less time on Facebook. I mean, the early days of Facebook was, you know, actually seeing your friends who live in California and what they've been up to with their kids. That's great, isn't it? You know, you're kind of,
to
be able to see them. But now I don't want to see a duckling riding on an Alsatian. I don't care, you know. Or a cat.
And yet we still spent hours doing it.
That's the worst bit, isn't it? Yeah. That's the bit. Back to the screen. You've got a finite amount of time on this planet. What are we doing that? You know, get some of those big rocks off your to-do list. Come on.
So what do you hate about other people's phone habits? Are there things that people do that drive you demented?
There are. One of the things is a thing which I don't know too much about, but Facetune is some horrendous sounding app where you can move.
I come across that a lot with teenage girls actually using that.
Someone actually said, an unnamed celebrity said, "Can you make me look like that Facetune?" Which is, you know,
what
pretty...
a shame you can't tell us who that is.
I know. Well, it is, isn't it? Yeah. I think your eyebrows would raise if so. But yeah, you know, how condescending and awful, you know, once I realised what Facetune was, you know, you're kind of moving the eyes and stuff around. So things like that, you know, don't do us any favours, really. So yeah, that's not a good thing. I read last week about a photographer who did an amazing set of pictures. And I don't know if you've seen them or not, but he photographed people, candid portraits of people with phones, unaware of him. So photographed with a telephoto lens, and he removed the phones in Photoshop.
I have seen them.
And I would love
to
see
amazing.
Them. You'll have to forward me the
link. Yeah, I will do. They're really powerful.
How
photograph.
Powerful is that? Yeah. I read about that and thought, God, I've got to see that, because, you know, it's like the kind of walking with your head down towards the lamppost type scenario, isn't it?
And one of the most powerful shots in that sequence is he's got a couple in bed. And they have their backs to each other because they're both looking, obviously, at what would have been their smartphones. I remember seeing his work. I can't remember who it is, but I'll look it up and I'll put it in the programme notes, episode notes.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that, just because I think that will exude some power, you know, won't it? We all see, I mean, every minute of every day you're seeing someone walking across a Pelican Crossing with their head down, aren't you, thinking, you know, or
why
cycling
don't you just
along,
look up?
You know. Just checking your stocks and shares while doing 20 miles an hour in the bike lane. You know, it's kind of
I walked down on the river near where we both live not that long ago, and I passed a woman watching a film on an iPad as she was walking along the towpath on a beautiful day in a beautiful location, watching a film on an iPad.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty bad, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
I'm doing my meditation app that I'm using at the moment is by Sam Harris. Do you know Sam Harris?
I don't. No.
It's called Waking Up. It's pretty amazing. But I was a big Headspace advocate before that. You know,
which I also
really like.
Yeah.
And I only, you know, I'm not, you know, I grew up with hippie parents, and I've kind of rebelled a bit against that. I'm not very woo-woo in any way, really. So 10 minutes of plain talking is about all I can kind of handle. But, you know, Sam Harris is, you know, as they all are, but Sam Harris particularly talking about really being in the moment and actually being extremely conscious and alert about what's happening right now, this second. And, you know, you think all of everything you've just talked about is the antithesis of that, isn't it?
Walking, I think we do
watching
that.
A film on a beautiful day while walking. It's like, well, how many things are you doing there? It's crazy, isn't it?
We all of us don't do that enough anymore, do we? Really appreciate what's going on in the moment. I think that's one of the casualties of life on screens.
Absolutely, I do. And therefore, all the more important to be having at least 10 minutes. If you can't find 10 minutes to stop and actually be really in the moment, then kind of what's the point, really? We've all got these busy, crazy lives, haven't we? Everyone is, you know, we're multitasking at the best of times, you know, even if it's not to do with tech, you're kind of kicking the oven door shut while frying the veg, you know, it's that, you know, we're busy, aren't we now? We're busy, you know, we live in this crazy metropolis of a city, it's hectic. We've all got kind of a little bit too much to do. So for me, it's, you know, really feel it's like a time where I need to be at least starting that every day with just a small amount of time being as in the moment as possible. And then what's the cumulative effect of that? I'm doing that 7 days a week. That's essentially becoming who I am. Mm. So, you know, at least even if I do get dragged into the tech by late afternoon, you know, then at least we've started this day in a good way and building a good habit and having some time actually being really here and now. I just think that's important that we're doing that right now for what's going to happen in years to come, you know.
So I just want to end by asking you three questions that I'm going to be asking everybody. And you might actually have answered some of these in what we've discussed, but I'll just put them out there. So my first question is, what's the one thing you'd like to say to everyone listening about their phone and tech habits? What's the message you'd like to get across?
Well, I think I would like to reiterate about taking 10 minutes to be very much in the moment, because I don't know if this is right or not, but at least that in some ways is possibly an antidote. At least you're giving yourself 10 minutes where you are being really in the moment. So at least spending some time being as mindful as possible.
You know. 10 minutes, as you say, is not a big ask.
I don't think it's a big ask, really. I think I don't see why you can't build that into your routine. So I think for me, that's probably my answer for that.
Okay, so my next question is, have you got a tip that you haven't shared already around getting a good balance with our tech life, with our on-screen and off-screen life?
I think being tight with your time, I think it is good. And I know we touched on that, but being very much in control of your time, depending on if you work for yourself or not, you know, I know if you're employed, that's very different. But, you know, as soon as I've done the first couple of things in my morning routine, I have my calendar open in Dayview, and that's where I block out what I'm doing, everything throughout the day until 7 o'clock. Everything has an allocated time slot, and it really took me a long time to drag myself to that conformity, because as I said earlier, it's not me in my nature. But that really helps. That really helps, because we're all procrastinators to a certain extent. Yeah. Me ever so much so, and give me any excuse to, oh, just go and clean that mark off the window when I should be doing something else, you know. Yeah. So I kind of, this sort of rigid conformity that I have rebelled against for a long time, I now find is, you know, weirdly satisfying, in that I can look back at the end of the day and see what I've achieved. You know, sometimes it's petty little in what I really hope to achieve, but because maybe some fires came in that needed to be fought, you know, welcome to the world. But at least there's a track and a game plan. And if you're following that or aiming to following that, then, you know, you're inadvertently highlighting to yourself, you know, that you're slipping away if you're having a tech moment. You know, you know that you're not then on your block. You know, I'm making it sound very sort of military.
It's about military-esque, taking control,
but I think it's about the control. I think it is,
yeah.
Because I think it's, you know, it's, are you a procrastinator, do you think?
Yeah, I think I can be. I think I can be guilty of the duck on the back of the Alsatian video.
Yeah.
I like the idea that of setting a plan rather than letting ourselves be led down a, you know, internet black hole. I like the idea of, you know, us actually managing our time. I think that's a really important lesson and something that we've all slightly forgotten. And as you said, really important for people who are self-employed. So many of us work for ourselves now.
Yeah, there's no guidelines, I don't think, for this. We didn't, you know, we learned long multiplication at school, you know, and fractions.
Not
and
how to manage our day.
You know, and pidgin French, but not how to run our lives. You know, it's so important now, you know. I feel like I've got another, you know, another good 10 or 15 years oomph in my career doing what I'm doing now, and I need every moment of that time to be improving and to be learning and to be pushing forward. It's vital and it's crucial. I feel it's like so important, yet, you know, I can get caught into these tech loops, you know. So it's just doing anything we can to kind of keep on track. And for me personally, it might not work for anyone else, but for me, it's that regimen, that regime, and having these time blocks to hold myself accountable to.
I like the idea of the countdown clock. I'm not sure if I'm a bit too nervous to actually
it is a bit
set
scary.
It out and have a look.
I'm going to send you a link.
Yeah, in terms of reminding ourselves what we're wasting, I think that sounds quite powerful as well.
Yeah.
So my last question is, what do you think you've learned about yourself from your phone and tech habits?
It's not a direct, perfect answer, but I think I've realised the addictive nature of it. You know, I've realised how powerful that is, even to the extent, whereas when I'm in the inane thumb scrolling, I know something's not right and I still can't drag myself away. But, you know, I read last week someone saying, hey, listen, you know, these people are spending billions of pounds on making you addicted to this, you know.
Yeah, so it's not an accident.
So it's not an accident. And I thought, well, God, what an interesting way of looking at it. It's sad, really. It's highlighted to me, you know, that I definitely do spend too much time not being useful on it. We spoke about Instagram and I said how beneficial that can potentially be, you know, and enjoyable as well. It's great for me to, you know, I follow some amazing photographers all over the world and see some beautiful images and that they're and some.
I love Instagram. You know, I think it's my favorite social platform.
Which is great.
It's so inspiring, isn't it?
It's inspiring, right. And I'm in the world of keeping creativity alive. That's my part of my mission.
Yeah.
So, you know, to do that, it's great to see, you know, what someone's doing in Southern California, where the late afternoon light is more golden than it would ever be here. And they're using this beautiful daylight and reflecting it and making these gorgeous pictures. And, you know, that I can bring that into my front room and can bring it into the palm of my hand. It's amazing. So whilst there are these amazing benefits, there's the inaneness as well. I went for dinner with my brother last week and he's removed almost everything from his home screen apart from, I think he's got his email button at the bottom and the phone thing and I think messages and that's it. I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive.
That's hardcore.
That's hardcore. Yeah, we'll go for dinner next week and let's see if it's still the same, you know.
So you've learned that you can be a procrastinator, which you maybe already knew about yourself.
Yeah.
But you've also learned that a lot of the online world is really inspiring.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why the podcast is called It's Complicated, because I think we've got those two things, haven't we? There are aspects of the online world that are really beautiful and valuable and inspiring, and we've just got to make sure we're spending really useful time there. Well, thank you so much for coming and chatting with me. I would really recommend following Dan Kennedy Photo on Instagram and D Kennedy Photo on Twitter. And definitely subscribing to the Dan Kennedy podcast, which has some really great conversations with other photographers and those working in the creative and visual arts. I've been listening to it this week, Dan. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you.
And if you want to learn from the master himself how to develop and hone your photography skills, Dan runs a select number of exclusive workshops in London, and all the details are on his website, dankennedyworkshops.com. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been great to chat to you.
Well, we've all been pushed around.
Thank you for listening to this episode of It's Complicated. If you haven't already, please do subscribe, rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps other people find us and it means you get a helpful little notification when a new episode becomes available. For more about getting a healthy balance with tech, you can follow me, Tanya Goodin, or Time to Log Off on Instagram and Twitter. And both my books, Off and Stop Staring at Screens, are available on Amazon and at all good bookshops. Finally, for more information about this and other episodes in the podcast series, visit itstimetologoff.com. But in the meantime, from me and from Dan, thanks for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.